Do we have? Oh, we do. We finally got to Knox Shrine. We're doing a little bit of overtime here. Father Richard Gibbons, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you again.
I tell you now, I was pulled up, as they say, by this Longford woman, the executive producer of the program, Anya Sheridan, and Anya says, you are painting a very wrong picture here of the very reverend Monsignor Parish Priest of Knock, because that doesn't paint the right picture at all. He is a young, hip priest, 10 years younger than me. So if you would like, you know, if you'd like to tell us what age you are, we'll add 10 years, and then we're not.
Well, well, you must be only 40 then, is that?
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway. I'm 47.
Oh, my God. See that? Okay. Listen, Father Gibbons, this is an historic occasion. And, you know, we had to stand back for a minute and scratch our heads since we indeed were delighted to be on the first transatlantic direct flight, on Aer Lingus, no less, to Knock, Ireland West Airport there a couple of years ago. But this is actually the first time that there has been a direct flight, a pilgrimage from Knock to JFK in New York. And tell us about it and
sure.
Lead us in to the great finale and the reason for this pilgrimage.
Right, you are. Okay, well, as you quite rightly say, 2 years ago, you came in on that wonderful flight with Cardinal Dolan, who came to speak at the Novena. And that was a wonderful occasion. It was great fun, and there was a great connection made with New York. And while the Cardinal was over, very cutting a long story short, I happened to be speaking with him one day at lunch with his secretary, and we were discussing Knock and all of that. And then what happened, when I took over Knock, I wanted to see where all the witnesses of the apparition, of which there were 15 official witnesses to the apparition in 1879, I wanted to know where they were all buried, make sure that the graves were looked after and taken care of. So we located most of them, practically all, and I came across a story about John Curry in New York. His grandnephew, John Curry, was 5 years old at the time of the apparition in 1879. He immigrated as a young man to New York. He never married, never had children, and I suppose the opposite maybe to doing very, very well. He just had really enough near the end just to cover his own expenses. He was taken in by the little sister of the poor in Manhattan in the late 1930s. He died in 1943, in the middle of the war, and was buried out in Long Island. The sisters had a plot of land there for those really who couldn't really afford to bury themselves and all of that. So when I found the story, his grandnephew then later on in 2009 wrote a book about him, and we saw where the grave, he'd located the grave, the exact location, but there was no headstone over him. So that's through no one's fault, really. It just wasn't done in those days, and nobody followed it up with putting a headstone over him. So I mentioned this to the Cardinal. I said, all I wanted to do was put a headstone over John Curry. And the Cardinal said to me in reply, we're going to do something better than that. We're going to exhume him and bring him in to St. Patrick's on Fifth Avenue. Now, you can imagine, Adrian, now my jaw metaphorically hit the floor at something like that, because that these things are not usually done. It was an incredible proposition, but his secretary, Father James, across the table, I could see sort of the blood draining from his face in terms of this this idea. But it was an incredible idea. Then when it turned out it couldn't be really at St. Patrick's on Fifth Avenue, but it could be in St. Patrick's, in Old St. Patrick's down in Little Italy, down there at the...
Yes, the Old St. Patrick's.
And so they proposed Old St. Patrick's then, Old St. Patrick's, St. Patrick's Old Cathedral, the first Catholic cathedral in New York City, which has a grave attached to it,
right.
One of the oldest in New York. So the proposal then was to bring him in, to exhume his remains and bring him in for reinterral in Old St. Patrick's, just to kind of acknowledge the important role, the fact that he saw this extraordinary event in 1879, and that it was poignant that this man really, who for all intents and purposes died without anything,
right.
Would be honored by the Cardinal Archbishop of New York in such an extraordinary way in one of the most historic locations in New York City. So that's how it all came about. And now on the 13th of May next, which is this day week, we will have a full Requiem Mass with Cardinal Dolan and practically a huge number of Irish people there in New York City and from around. A Requiem Mass to reinter him in Old St. Patrick's at 11 o'clock on the 13th of May. And as a result of that, we thought it would be a good idea and fitting to bring as many people from Ireland as we possibly could, especially from the locality here and his relations. And we have the first chartered with Aer Lingus from Knock Airport to JFK, leaving Knock on Monday morning next and arriving in JFK at 3 p.m. Monday afternoon. So we'll be in New York then for the week, and there are a number of events, which no doubt I'll meet up with you at, Adrian,
yes.
Throughout that course of the week. And then we have the reinterral on Saturday and a Mass of Thanksgiving on Sunday morning in St. Patrick's on Fifth Avenue, again led by the Cardinal, and we return home on Sunday afternoon.
You know, it can be said, indeed, and the Cardinal, having great respect for your good self, but the Cardinal actually has a great affinity and a great affiliation with Knock, just in case somebody figures he only discovered Knock when he led the pilgrimage there. He has a genuine, grand and a great fondness for Knock Shrine, and now for Knock Basilica, the refurbished, rebuilt, one might say, Basilica at Knock. Does that go back for a long time?
The connection goes back, Adrian, to I took over Knock in 2012, and after the late Monsignor Horn, or Monsignor Quinn died, and that year, 2012, was the year of the International Eucharistic Congress.
That's so
you're quite right. The Cardinal has been coming to Knock for years and years and years, and he loves Knock. But he decided to lead a pilgrimage for the International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin, and he visited Knock, and I met him here. And he suggested on that occasion in 2012 that I would preach in St. Patrick's for St. Patrick's Day in March of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, I was extraordinarily privileged to do that. It was an extraordinary event for myself personally.
And being I know you being from Lewisburg, you wouldn't like me cutting in there, but you don't have to respond to this. But that was a first. It was a first to have a visiting clergyman from anywhere in the world be the principal speaker at St. Patrick's on that very significant day. But again, it was a great honor for you, but also it brought a further light onto a place many people would think would probably from our side of the Atlantic would be familiar, say, with Lourdes and, and Fatima, and, of course, Knock. I think that the accessibility of Knock and Knock Airport for Americans now, from those from North America, has to be something that you know, makes it easier for those many of whom have had a lifelong ambition to revisit Knock. There are, of course, so many people who've made a trip to Knock where access by air was awkward at best. There has to be a tremendous interest in Knock and Knock Shrine, and the fact that the Basilica is so superb, and now with the possibility of, you know, of direct flights, and even because of the super highways that now have, it doesn't make a difference actually where you land in Ireland. Accessibility to Knock is easy, and that has to show in terms of the number of visitors to Knock and to Knock Shrine, which are ever increasing.
Yes, and the connection with the United States is extraordinarily important for us because, like you quite rightly say, people like to connect with their family, with their heritage, with their faith, and because of the airport, it certainly is one of the key infrastructural components for the building up of the West of Ireland, but also to visit Knock as the National Marian Shrine in Ireland. That there is a connection with Knock. Like, it's extraordinary when I visited the States how many parishes have some sort of an affiliation or connection. We have people from Knock or from the area or from Ireland that
right.
know about Knock. But also, there's the communities that would have actually, let's say, a statue or a commemoration of Knock. For example, down in Long Island, there's in East Islip.
Yes.
There's a community down there, a parish that has an ancient order of Hibernian hall. And right outside the hall is a large, huge statue of Our Lady of Knock, because they dedicated their unit, Unit 7.
Right.
And I say hello to them all down there. Unit 7 is Our Lady of Knock Division. And it's
yes.
extraordinary. I didn't know that existed, or they existed until I met them here at Knock. And then we have this very strong connection. In Massachusetts, for example, in Clinton, Massachusetts, north of Boston, there's a community there that actually their people mostly came from Lewisburg to work there in the textile industry. But
yes.
in 1966, they unveiled an exact replica of the apparition statues, a huge thing, on the back of their church, which I didn't know about until I went out and
yeah.
investigated, and there was a connection made. So, and I believe there's a shrine to Our Lady of Knock in the Catskill Mountains.
In East Durham, New York.
I'd love to get there to see them, maybe
yeah.
not this trip, but definitely again. So all of these connections, Adrian, are hugely important for us. And if there's one of them, there's hundreds of them. And
yes.
it's our opinion here, my opinion, that these connections can be certainly consolidated, they can be built upon, and that is why we're so grateful to Aer Lingus, and we use Aer Lingus in terms of these chartered
yes.
transatlantics, because I believe that Aer Lingus should be a scheduled flight out of Knock into JFK every summer, and just for the summer months, just to initiate it, and not only into JFK, but also into Boston and possibly Chicago. But we don't get too greedy. We just start one step at a time. But,
right.
So we would certainly appeal to Aer Lingus to do that. The business is there. We can see it. You've
yes.
seen it. The business is there. People will go. And once scheduled flights are put on the map, the prices come down automatically, so it makes it more affordable
right.
for our friends in the States to come over here, and accessibility is perfect. And we've so many great sites around the West, such as Ballintubber
yeah.
Abbey, Lough Derg, Westport. Like, I don't want to do the tourist board's job for them now, but like, they're all there.
Listen,
it's that connection we want to make.
Listen, you mentioned Lewisburg, so for equal time, could you throw Ati Mass in there too? Do you know what I mean? Just
absolutely.
Just a balance.
Ati Mass, no problem.
The Father Patron.
It's actually, you'll be glad to hear, Adrian, Ati Mass is on our brochures here in Knock. We always include Ati Mass.
Yeah, all right. Well,
yeah.
There you go. Now, this, for the benefit of those who might want to attend the Requiem Mass, You don't need tickets. It's a first-come, first-served basis. The Requiem Mass will be celebrated next Saturday morning. It starts at 11 o'clock. And for John Curry, the witness to the apparition at Knock, on that August 21st, 1879. Now, he was from Knock, right? Wasn't he?
That's correct.
Le Caro?
Le Caro is right, exactly yeah. right. Yes, indeed.
And
he has no actual relatives, immediate relatives located here, Adrian,
right.
in the parish anymore. The nearest is a grand-nephew, grand-nephews and grand-nieces, but
yeah.
the chief one will be his namesake, John Curry, who lives in Dublin, and
yes.
he will be coming out.
Now, what was, at that time, obviously, in the aftermath of the famine, it was not unusual where you had families in distress or large families, where members of that family might be, farmed out to uncles or to grandparents or to something else. He wasn't actually living with his siblings at the time, was he?
No, that's right. And that is the case in those days, that especially if relatives had no children themselves, like say you had a brothers or sisters, that kind of thing, and they had no children. So a family, especially a large family, then you, one or two of the children,
right.
once the relationship was built up, like it wasn't sort of here you are, he's landed on the doorstep, but
right.
through that closeness and bonding, that it would be natural for that to happen.
And it was,
from your own history, that,
sure.
that was certainly the case in the area, yeah.
And indeed, in many cases where you had grandparents, where the children had gone away and spread out, mm-hmm. it would have been mutually beneficial to have a member of the family, a grandchild, move mm-hmm. in with them. It really, just what I wanted to clarify, it wasn't indeed a matter of farming them out or giving,
yeah.
you know, trying to spread them out. This was part of a Mehel mentality. It was a great act. In some cases, obviously, it was necessary, but in many cases, it was part of the Irish awareness that relatives, that siblings, that grandparents, that older people would welcome, and it wasn't as if they were adopting. But in fact, it served a very good purpose. But it's
yes,
telling. Yeah, isn't it telling?
It was like a type of almost, if you forgive the, a pension plan that you looked at and you cared for those that weren't able. It was mutually beneficial to all members of the family.
Sure. Yeah. And now he was, one of the. By proximity, he would have been easy, and it would have been natural that he would have been part of that family visiting Knock. So we'd have to assume that the families were quite geographically close to each other.
They were. That's yeah. correct. They were. Yeah, and because that's how word got around. In fact. They all saw the light, but they came from different houses, and naturally enough, you can imagine, curiosity got the better, and then you want to
yeah.
tell somebody about it. Like, do you see what I'm seeing kind of thing, knocking on doors and going around to the surrounding, that there's something going on at the church. So there were quite a number of them. Now, we have to remember that John was only 5 years of age at the time,
okay.
and
yeah.
his testimony in the subsequent commission of inquiry was very limited, as a five-year-old's vocabulary now wouldn't be on the same par as those that were older. So, he testified that he saw wonderful, marvelous, beautiful things. But then there was a second commission of inquiry in New York that was conducted in 1937.
Right.
And he was brought forward for that, just to see if his story stacked up, obviously. If
right.
it was the same as the others, he wouldn't have had access to the others, like Patrick Hill, who was another witness to the vision,
yes,
to the apparition, met up with him, all right, and there's a picture of the two of them. But he was questioned again, and he replied that he remembers it, and I quote this, he remembers it as distinctly as if it happened yesterday. So it was quite an impression that made a deep impact on him, and that he recalled every single detail, and the authenticity, yeah, of his testimony was corroborated by the other testimonies then at the time.
Can you bring us back to the apparition itself?
Sure.
Our Lady and the Blessed Virgin appeared on the gable, but she had company.
She had company.
She did. And that, again, I think, went a long way in terms of the testimony and in terms of, the inquiries into, the apparition itself, including the five-year-old. What was the scene for Knock, for the benefit of those who
sure.
Briefly,
the scene.
Yep. Go ahead.
The scene in 1879, it was a Thursday evening, 21st of August, around 8 o'clock in the evening. It was raining, surprise, surprise. So on that evening, somebody saw a light at the gable end. They went to investigate. They went to a number of houses around, and just to, do you see, as I said before, do you see what, is this what I'm seeing? Do you see the same thing? So people came from their respective different houses and parts of the village to see what was going on. In fact, there's a testimony from one individual who was living several fields away. He was out on his field, out in the field at the time, and he looked over and he thought the church was on fire, such was the brightness of the light. And that is independent. In those days, obviously, yeah, as you know, in 1879, they weren't texting each other or anything like that. So these were independently attested to in terms of who saw what, which gave to the credibility of what people were seeing. Like, what I'm saying is that it wasn't,
yes,
a mass hallucination. They were in different parts of the village at the time. So 1879, 21st of August, Thursday evening, raining, 8 o'clock in the evening, this manifestation occurred. It consisted of Our Lady, St. Joseph, St. John the Evangelist, an altar, a lamb, and a cross, around which was a manifestation of what was testified to be angels. Now, you could say, yeah, right, and say, well, now, there must have been something in the air that evening or whatever. But I suppose what lends the authenticity of the apparition is, for me, and when journalists ask me, is the fact that you couldn't make this up. If you wanted to perpetrate a hoax, just stick to Our Lady,
right,
and just say you saw Our Lady. Don't start adding in others, Josephs and altars and lambs and everything else, because as sure as goodness, within a week that story will fall apart,
right,
immediately, because it's just too complicated. And even for the level of education of the people of the time, they would not be that theologically sophisticated to add in what they saw if it was a hoax. It was just too complex. It's one of the most complex and sophisticated apparitions that has occurred in the history, actually, of apparitions in the Catholic Church. It's just very, very complicated. There's a huge amount of symbolism in what was seen, but most importantly as well, distinct from quite a lot of other apparitions, is that nothing was said. No words were spoken. No message was communicated bar the apparition itself. So in Lourdes you had a message, in Fatima and several other places. So it was a very, very, it was a silent apparition.
In one of the most remote villages.
There was nothing there, nothing except the church, the parish church, a couple of small, you might say, an Irish, a bohan of a house, small little cottages,
yes,
small little farmers' cottages around the place. That's it. Nothing else. extremely remote, like NOC didn't even figure on anybody's radar in terms of importance.
Yeah.
But there's quite, in 1879, of course, in the history of the country, there's quite a lot of agrarian agitation and,
yes,
and war and all of that going on at the time. So the people, you know, and there were mini famines actually in 1879 in the West again, on a minor scale to the 1847 one, but certainly very, very, very prominent in people's minds, you know.
Yes, I'm being reminded here by Anya Sheridan, who thinks you're hip, that you have another mass to say, and she's telling me to get off the air. So.
I commend Anya very, very much. She's a great woman.
That's right. And I tell you what, this is the last time I'm going to refer to you as the very reverend, you know, canon.
You just like throwing in titles. That's all.
This is, I know who are, you know, many of the people who are preparing, you know, for your pilgrims and yourself to come here. And if they want to add the titles, far be it from me to drop any of them. You know yourself.
You're very gracious as always.
God bless. Thank you indeed.
Thank you, Adrian, and
okay.
Thanks to all you.
Okay, we'll be looking forward to seeing you during the week. And friends, direct from Knock Shrine in County Mayo, they're a great leader and a great, somebody who's done amazing work as parish priest, as rector of Knock, Father Richard Givens. Okay, we're on the way out the door.